Hi everyone, welcome back. If you're new to me, I'm Shoa Allegra, founder of Grace and Hope Consulting, where we empower people to achieve mental and emotional wellness, reach their full potential, and live fulfilling lives. And everything we do here evolves around resilience. And we're inviting some new friends to the table to kind of talk about resilience, what it looks like in their lives, so that we can, you know, glean some wisdom from their journeys that we can apply in our own journeys as well. So today I have Tina Fu with me. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, Shu. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we'll just get started. And if you don't mind, just kicking us off here by just sharing who you are and what you do.
Yes. So I am I was born in Canada, first generation Italian Canadian. Both my parents are from Italy, and I grew up in one of our eastern provinces, the province of Ontario. I'm Canadian, so I grew up in Ontario. And when I went through Catholic school, of course, being Italian, and a good high school and university in Toronto. And after I graduated, I moved out west, and I'm still out west. I currently live in Edmonton, Alberta. And I lived in a small town, a mountain town called Banff for many years. And that's where my daughter was born and raised. And I had gotten married to my first husband. I met him in Banff and got divorced. I still had the kid after that. She grew up and had a baby girl of her own. After she moved to a neighboring province. And that's how my story starts out. I wrote a book called Fancy Prison. So I'll just hold it up here for you. And it's our story of resilience, really. It was my daughter during her last month of pregnancy, somebody had called about some complaint that she wasn't going to be a good mother, and social workers got involved in the last month of her pregnancy, and she thought that she had it under control. But really, I mean, if we could turn back time, we didn't know anything. We were just so blindsided by the power that the system has, and how we had to really dig deep for our strength, our collective strength and love and commitment for, as a family together, and go up against the system. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's me, a mom, a grandma, and our story has a happy ending, but I gotta look into a system that it needs a lot of work. And I really felt like I needed to write this book and start to shed some light on this system.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks for just, you know, sharing that and writing the book. So then, you know, obviously I tell everyone, you know, share as much as you're comfortable. But I'm curious then, so when the system got involved, you know, at the last month, if you want, of your daughter's pregnancy, and just thinking about, I'm a mom, and in the last month, all you want is just to get that baby out, right? You're just like a tired of carrying it, and you want to get the baby here, and then just, you know, hold the baby. And then, you know, your family had to deal with this, you know, almost, in for lack of a better term, almost like an intruder, right? Just like coming and interrupting, you know, what was coming, was, you know, what the plans that, you know, you had. And so take us back there. Like, how did that feel? And, you know, and.
Sure. Well, intruding and disrupting definitely is a good way to explain it. So I will clarify again, like, I live in a different province than my daughter. So when the baby was born, I wasn't there. Like, I wasn't there in the last month of her pregnancy. This was all information that I found out after the fact. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, parts of this details, of course, I put into the book, Fancy Prison, when I catalog or chronicle our story. But so, and I figured, well, I'll go see the baby when she's 2 or 3 months old, because babies don't come at, you know, at a given time. I mean, we knew her due date and that was it. But as far as the rest of it's concerned, like I was blindsided. I really had no idea that the power that they have, whatever their intentions were about getting involved with my daughter and taking the baby, which they did. They took her when she was 2 weeks old, but we got her back. And you would think that getting a child who who's your own flesh and blood, you would think that getting her back out of foster care would be easy. It wasn't easy. Like, we had to deal with this bureaucratic system, and, you know, hence the resilience and the strength that we had to really tap into, the patience, because we couldn't really lose our temper dealing with them at all. It was it was tricky. It was very, very tricky. It's hard to explain in a few minutes. And that's why, you know, a lot of times when I write out the book, I can express my words a little bit better than, you know, in a conversation sometimes, because it was just so overwhelming and it was so stressful. So when you're writing, and you've written many books as well, you know what it's like. Sometimes you're just trying to explain a feeling or get that word. And in a conversation, it might not come to you like that. But when you're reading, you can take the time. It's like, is that the right word? No, I think I'll choose this one, right? So that's why I liked writing it out a lot better.
And also writing kind of leaves that legacy for others too, because often we talk about the foster care system on the other end of the system, the families who are, you know, receiving the kids. And I know the system was set up to help, but sometimes we miss stories like your family stories, right? And where sometimes, you know, the acquisition are not always accurate, or sometimes then people need a little bit of help and it's giving them the support that they need in order to thrive, rather than just kind of snatching kids away without support, and what gets to me about all of this, I'm actually having a meeting in a couple of weeks, sometime we're recording the people listening, with a group of moms just a new group of my people that I'm just getting to know, but someone that I knew me, reached out to me, reached out to me, and she's helping this group of mom who have the children taken into the system. The trauma of it. That's what gets to me. Like, as you're talking, the trauma of it, I'm lost of words. I'm not here saying, all these things, all these systems we have are here intentionally. Intention was right, it was good. But I think sometime in developing the systems, we lose the people we're trying to support.
I'm going to emphasize, right there, what you said in there, because my book, it has that beginning. It starts out with me driving through a blizzard in March of 2017. So this happened 5 years ago. My granddaughter now, she's 5 years old. But so it starts out with this blizzard, and I go in and I chronicle our timeline, but there's not enough emphasis, and I detail this in my book, that moment when they announced they were taking her away from us, that's trauma. That, like, we were blindsided, and that was trauma. And so at the end of my book, I do kind of touch on this a little bit, that we don't have enough in our Western culture to acknowledge trauma and to treat it. So this group that you're doing with these moms, that's wonderful. That is just so wonderful to be acknowledging that trauma and to start to, and every mom is going to be at a different step in there, with different ages of when their child was taken, different circumstances when that trauma hit and they took the baby. Like our baby, she was 2 weeks old, so she couldn't talk, but some of the scenarios that you may or may not heard of, I've certainly heard of it, where children are older and they're kicking and screaming as they're, and they're children, they don't really understand what's going on, and they don't understand why they're being taken from their parents, but they are just like kicking and screaming and crying and begging for their moms because they don't understand. How did we get like this? This is not a solution. How is taking a child away from a parent when they're kicking and screaming like that, how is that considered a solution? So I do think that fancy prison starts to ask some of these questions about the system. I don't have all the answers. I can only really talk about one case with 100% accuracy, and that's our case. But I had to start somewhere, and that was my book, Fancy Prison. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think we all have to start somewhere. If we start sharing more of our stories, that's how we shed light on these issues. Because especially things involving the government often are one-sided. Right. And
yes,
I'm not here, you know, I'm not here to criticize the government per se. Like, you know, it has its place, but
I do. Yeah. I sum it up in my book. Yeah, I have a lot of criticism because of the imbalance of power.
Right, right. And that's getting to that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like it has its place for different things, but when there, when there's imbalance of power, then the people who need the support the most get disempowered, get marginalized. Mm-hmm. For the sake of the strong, the mighty. And that is not fair. That is not people oriented. That is not support.
No. That is not, to me, in the best interest of the child. Like I just explained the scenario with the child kicking and screaming, and often social workers will come flanked by police officers. Again, what kind of image is that? You know, and it's just, I do challenge it in the first regard to people who, like, and I was one of them back in, you know, prior to 2017, before this happened to us, I was one of these people who just always assumed, oh, they must have, if CPS is involved, they must have the reasons. No. So that's the first thing I challenge by writing Fancy Prison is, no, they don't always have the reasons. And the reasons change very systematically and at their convenience. It has, it has nothing to do with what, you know, what was best for us. It seemed to be what fit their narrative. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really sad. Really sad. Yeah. And for anyone listening or whatnot to this, just know for clarity, if you're not from West CPS, it's Child Protective Services.
Yeah. In my book, I explain that acronym, I think on page one, you know, because of the, and I think it does contribute to the overall confusion that it's different names in different provinces here in Canada, probably different names in different states. You know, I'm not that familiar with each of the United States, but in our book, like I said, I live in Alberta, and then my daughter, which is one name for CPS, and then in the province of British Columbia, where my grandbaby was born, it's called MCFD, which the acronym stands for Ministry of Child and Family Development. So yeah, I mean, it's just different names at different provinces, which again, seems to contribute to the overall confusion of this whole system.
And I'm going to say names also matter. I like child development, family development. There's place for protection, but if we focus more on developing families, then we will have less and less need to be protecting children.
Yes. I do question that too. It's like, how can this be called child development? Because I didn't see any developing going on.
And so what has helped you and your daughter through that journey, you know, to kind of build that resilience and to push through, like you say, going against the system to getting your granddaughter back. And like you said, it was not easy. I can only imagine.
I think that really helped my daughter and I is that we had a healthy sense of boundaries, and we had already very clear roles. Like I was always the mother, and she was always the daughter. So as long as she trusted me there, and I wasn't there to undermine her as a mother, I was there in a support capacity. So as long as she trusted me, I think that's what really helped us stay together, not to be divided by them. Because I think they were trying to exploit weaknesses in our relationship. But we communicated, we trusted each other, we respected each other's boundaries. And I wasn't there to undermine my daughter at all. Like I wasn't there to take custody of her baby. I took temporary custody of it, but emphasis on the temporary. That was just the court orders that we agreed to for 3 months, a temporary custody order. But that's what we had to go through to sort of beat them at their own game. And again, it's kind of hard to explain unless read through totally the timeline and fancy mm-hmm. prison as mm-hmm. to, you know, why we serve out those court orders. Yeah.
And then there is such a thing where as kinship, foster care, right? It's someone in the family, mm-hmm. being responsible for the child. And I mean, we can sit here and think of all the different reason why and why not, for this entire process. Mm-hmm. But I think mm-hmm. at the end of the day, even let's say if truly there's truly reasons that it's founded that, believe the parent is really struggling at that point, probably kinship is more human, I guess, solution, because if this child stays within the family and still have build those family bonds, because we all need that sense of belonging. And, mm-hmm. we need to know where we came from,
For sure. And I think that these government agencies do a very beautiful job of putting exactly what you said in these words on paper and projecting that to the general public. Oh, this is what we do. But if they actually don't do that, and I saw no evidence of that, actually, if they do the complete opposite of what those written policies are, they're not worth the paper that they're written on. I can only really talk about our case with 100% mm-hmm. accuracy, but I was mm-hmm. right there in the room. I have no criminal record, no drugs, no alcohol. I'm an educated person. I've lived in Canada all my life. I've lived and worked here, paid taxes, mm-hmm. law-abiding citizen. There was no reason at all that my granddaughter should not have automatically gone to me mm-hmm, at 2 mm-hmm. weeks old instead of going to strangers in foster care. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I mean by that. They can write these policies and procedures until the cows come home. If they actually don't follow them, they don't mean anything at all. It's just lip mm-hmm, service. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really sad. I said, so the happy ending, like you said, that your granddaughter mm-hmm. came back. And now we were talking just before we started recording here that, she's 5 and, definitely, yeah. She's with you ladies. And so did at some point, did she know the story or not yet? Or?
Oh, well, she's too. Oh, yeah. She's too young. I mean, we got her back. In 27 days, which is a very, very short time as far as these mm-hmm. cases are concerned. Mm-hmm. And if she has some level of what or some understanding of what she went through, mm-hmm. I have no idea. She was a baby when this happened. Because she was a baby. So spiritually, mm-hmm. I don't know what was going on in her mind. Right. But again, it's interesting in Fancy Prison because I do talk about a spiritual connection I do made with her. Mm-hmm. And I'm Christian. So I just think that, God, she was delivered to us from God. She was a newborn baby and she's mm-hmm. the only one in that room who had any real power at all. And she was pretty much dictating what her life was going to be like. And she would be with her family. She wasn't going to be mm-hmm. bouncing around the foster care system. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I totally get, like you say, with her being young and all that. I know even for families who get, adopt children, this time where kind of share the whole story. So I was wondering if, at some point that's, and if you don't have to share now, I was just kind of curious.
I'll give her the book. Definitely. I'll give her the book at some point. Like I think on her 18th birthday, I have a box of all these little keepsakes that I will give her. So if she hasn't already read the book, she will then. And my daughter's a very chatty person. I mean, I'm sure that she'll have told her daughter her own stories by then. But again, my daughter and I, we're two different people. So, mm-hmm. and I've developed my own relationship with my granddaughter mm-hmm. and my daughter raises her child, the way that she wants to. So we're obviously, there's similarities, but we mm-hmm. also have two different relationships with her.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'll tell her I'll get her to read the book. Cause like I said, I think sometimes the words, you can't always, in a conversation, you can't always get that right word, but when I'm writing it out, I can pause and think about what the right word is for that situation. So
yeah,
she'll definitely know the story about how we fought for her.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for fighting for her. And I'm sure for this book, also advocating for many, many other families,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. who deal with similar situations, and sometimes they don't have anyone to advocate for them. So thank you. Thank you for living, mm-hmm. leaving mm-hmm. that legacy of hope mm-hmm. for other families.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of times they just need to be heard and believed. Mm-hmm. So that group, again, that you're doing with these women, it's sharing and talking mm-hmm. and helping with coping skills, and that helps yeah. build resilience. Yeah, again, like you'll find when you're coaching them that they're probably at different stages with mm-hmm. different age groups of the children. So, you know, again, right, I can right. only really talk about our case.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so where can people find the book?
Yeah, it's the book. I'm just going to hold it up to my face here. So
there you go.
You can find it on Amazon, but probably the best thing to do is Google Fancy Prison by Tina Fuma. But be specific and put my name in there, because if you just Google Fancy Prison, you're going to end up with people doing country club sentences and these fancy, literally fancy prisons. So that's not what my book is about. Google Fancy Prison, Calling BS on the Child Welfare Industry. That's the subtitle mm-hmm. by Tina Fumo, me. So F-U-M-O is how you spell my last name. Mm-hmm. And it will give the links to Amazon. I'm in Canada, so if you Google it, it'll automatically go to amazon.ca, but then mm-hmm. if you're in the UK or whatever, it's different links. Right. And then I'm on LinkedIn a lot. Mm-hmm. and or Facebook, I check those social media accounts every day if people want to get in touch with me, and or podcasts like this. So you're on YouTube, I think, right? So mm-hmm. it will, if you Google Fancy Prison by Tina Fumo, and then it will link back to an interview with mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Thanks for, you know, what you do. And any last words, maybe of encouragement to anyone dealing with similar situation?
Yeah, lots of encouragement, but I guess in a nutshell, just don't give up. I mean, that I think sometimes when the systematic routine that they use to apprehend the children, it gives you the advantage, because it's so systematic that you know what they're going to pull, so you can actually be prepared for it. So don't give up. Do your homework and don't give up. Because there is a way to beat it.
Yeah, do your homework, right? There's definitely a lot of things that we miss because we don't know.
Yeah.
And so the more you do your homework, the more you find out, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And understandably, because you're reacting and you're just so shocked. And I guess maybe that's another thing too, is just try to be calm. I know it's hard. It is the mm-hmm. hardest thing to do. Because I think the tendency is when social workers show up at your doorstep, you automatically go, what? So, what? Mm-hmm. Someone called? Like, what did they mm-hmm. say? You know, so that seems to be your
automatic shocking, go-to. Yeah.
It is shocking. It is. But, and that's normal. So that's why I say remaining calm. It's hard to do, but if you can do that, that's a really good skill, because it's like, and then get a lawyer. It's like, oh, you have a complaint against me? Oh, okay. Do you have something in writing? Oh, okay. You don't want to show me? All right. Let me just get my lawyer and like, you know, that kind of, if you can just sort of be, okay, just very even keel and see if you can get something from them in writing. You know, a lot of times they keep it very vague, which I explain why they do that in Fancy Prison. But there's lots of advice, but again, I can only really talk about one case. I've definitely learned a lot by listening to other people, learned about some of the mistakes that they've made and maybe how they could have done things differently. But every case is so different. Every child is so different.
You know? Right. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks again, Agassiz, for being here, for sharing. And we'll be sure to, you know, share those links to, you know, to the book, you know, to your LinkedIn and so forth, so that people can connect with you.
Sounds good. Yeah. There's strength and power in numbers. Yes,
definitely. All right. For everyone watching, thank you and be well.